Marching song, we sing on land or sea, blue surf and storm and howling gale, high shall our purpose be. Semper Paratus is our guide, our fame, our glory too, to fight, to save or fight and die, high Coast Guard we are for you.
I decided to post these episodes not staggered days apart like I normally would for a podcast, but basically on the same day. This originally was well over 90 minutes long in conversation. I hacked off about 7 minutes of fumbling around and early on stuff and warming up and all that didn't need to be heard. But I could not find a way to extract or remove things that would lessen the impact. Paul Langlois has gone through unspeakable medical challenges. My shoulder doesn't hurt as much. That's about the extent of my injuries at this point at the age of 60, because I was lifting weights too much. My right shoulder's a little sore. And I'm listening to him taking notes going, how is this guy still moving forward? It comes down to the indomitable human spirit for me. And it shows up in the form of Paul Langlois. And as you also heard in the last episode of this podcast, Cliff Bayouk, you know, he also was aware of the synchronicity. He put all this together. You know, and he's a former Navy guy who became a Coast Guard guy, which is probably a better decision on his part. And all of these things basically became connected dots, and that's what you're listening to. I can't tell people what to take out of conversations or the episodes of the podcasts. I have intent behind all of this. You know, inform, entertain, and inspire. And if I do those three things enough, this is the way that I pay for the space I take up on the planet. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I do it no matter what, come what may. It's conversations like this that, listen, subscribers pay $20 a month to get this message out in the world. And if you'd like to do that, you know, just it's easy to do. You go one of the podcasts that says subscribe only and you click that. And for $20 a month, which is basically the cost of a pizza, this is what people get a chance to feed themselves on, is these kind of conversations. You won't hear this anywhere else. You're not going to hear long-form, in-depth, lift-up-the-human-spirit conversations anywhere that I know of, not like this. And these two gentlemen are proof of that. So this is episode 2 of the Life 2.0 podcast with Paul Langlois and Cliff Bayouk.
The ambulance came and got me, brought me to the local emergency room, the same place who saved my life twice earlier. Hmm. They basically said, I'm in septic shock. I was unconscious. My blood pressure was very, very low. And the doctor came out after I was in there for about an hour and told my wife that they could not recover me, that I was going to die. And it was too late. And she screamed at them and told them, you've got to do something. And you have to save him. He's a strong guy. Please do whatever you can. And so they said, well, we'll try one other thing. And they apparently loaded me up with vasopressors, which is a drug which increases blood pressure to vital organs. And apparently it kept me going. Unfortunately, it has a very difficult side effect when you apply this medication to the body, and that is it eliminates the flow to the extremities. Mm-hmm. You know, in my case, my hands and my feet and my nose started to die and basically didn't get any blood. And when that happens, it's like frostbite. It starts to die off and become blackened and hardened and obviously very painful. Well, after about a day, Stanford had heard about my situation through, passing notes back and forth with the doctor. network. And once they found out that I was there and I'm in difficult status, they wanted me, basically. You know, I am a heart patient recipient, and in some funny way, they believe they own me. But in reality, they really wanted to take care of me. And
sure.
they sent their life flight helicopter and picked me up.
Did you have did you have the strength to tell the pilots how to fly it or no?
Yeah, I chuckle. I wish I was awake and could, you know, be part of the flight and keep an eye on the pilot. But no, I was not awake. And so I end up at Stanford and back to where it all started again. And they know my situation. And I was unconscious for at least 2 weeks. They had to load me up with all kinds of painkillers and drugs to mess with my head. And, you know, now and then I kind of came in and out of some kind of twilight zone, but not in a way that I could understand what was happening. But I did come out, and 2 weeks later, my son and my wife, surrounded by doctors and nurses, and I came back to reality of what happened. And I could see my hands and feet were all blackened and hardened, and they told me. And then I learned that I would have to have amputations, and it was kind of a difficult time for me to deal with, but I accepted it, and I knew I was alive, and I was surrounded by loved ones, and I had survived. Again, I had survived, and so that led to about 10 surgeries over a period of 3 months. I learned my lung had collapsed while I was unconscious. They revived that. And I went through a very difficult time of amputations and the reality that I would not have part of my legs and my hands again. I was finally able to be released around Christmas time, but I didn't get to go home yet because I now had to learn how to walk and do basic things like eat and things that it's hard to talk about, but go to the bathroom and
sure.
do all those things without any hands or legs.
Now, Paul, how long ago was this? How long has this been in this state for you? How long has this been?
Well, now this was 3 years ago, mm-hmm. two and a half to 3 years ago when all this happened. So it would be September 2016.
Okay.
And I was around Christmas 2016. And so through the New Year's period, I was brought to a new hospital by ambulance closer to home, which was nice for Linda because while I was in the hospital, she was visiting me every day and living with her brother in Pacifica, which is near San Francisco, and traveling at 1 hour back and forth, but she wasn't going home. And so every day she would come and visit with me and keep an eye on me and then go back to stay with her brother. And so when I moved to the next hospital in Marin County, that was about 1 hour from home. Mm-hmm. She would get to go home, and that was a little bit easier on her.
Sure.
I was in this hospital, which was a rehab center, for about a month, and the physical therapist really worked me over. And I at that point met a prosthetist, which for those who don't know what that is somebody who makes artificial limbs and helped me learn that I could, you know, learn with prosthetic devices on my legs to possibly stand up again. In other words, I may not have to be in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And so he made me a set, and he brought them over on Christmas Eve, and he allowed me to try them on, and he said, I asked him if I could try to stand up. He said, sure, it might hurt, but I stood up on the side of my bed and popped into these things that were molded to my legs. And I have a part of my leg below my knee, mm-hmm. about one foot, maybe 9 inches below my knee.
On both legs?
On both legs, and it's symmetric.
Mm.
And so both of my my stumps, if you will, my residual limbs look similar. And the the surgeons decided to sever my legs in a symmetric way to hopefully make it easier for me to walk versus having the abnormal or differential legs. So they could have gone right at the ankle, or they could have gone further up or even above my knee, but it seems to have worked out pretty well for me. So anyway, I hopped up into my prosthetic legs and stood up with a walker to support me. And I then asked the guy, hey, can I take one step? He said, sure, but you're probably going to want to go right back to sit on your bed. And that led to taking two steps. And I walked right outside into the hallway, down the hall and back. And my prosthetic doctor was almost beside himself. He couldn't believe I had done that. I was crying and laughing. It was crazy that I could actually do that. So,
I was going to say, he's never had a Coast Guard guy in there before, apparently, has he?
That was a break point for me. I kind of reached, without knowing it, I reached a goal of a new milestone, I guess, in my recovery, that I knew I could be more than just a guy living in a wheelchair the rest of my life. So that was a very exciting time for me. And from then it progressed into much more capable. I can walk for an hour now and not have any canes or crutches.
Oh, that's great. Let's just jump ahead, because if that's not enough, right? I'm sitting here taking notes of these various challenges you had, and I ran out of paper. And so you've gone through all of that, but apparently now you're back on a transplant list, or should be, or could be?
Yeah, well, in the last 2 months, my status has deteriorated with my kidneys, and I finally was told that I've been in stage 5. And so I figured, I was hoping I would never have to get to the stage 5 level, but stage 5 means my kidneys are near completely failed. And so you really have to begin to consider a transplant or a dialysis treatment. So back in May, I went back to Stanford and I went through the qualification process for kidney transplant. And after various tests and whatnot, I learned in June that I was successfully qualified for kidney transplant, which was a very exciting moment for me. I also learned, that donors can be either deceased or a living donor, as you were, yep. John. Mm-hmm. And so I am in the process of trying to seek a living donor or donors to consider going through the process of being qualified to do that. It's a great gift for someone to actually give one of their healthy kidneys to me and keep me alive longer. And by doing that, would eliminate the need for dialysis, which is basically, or has become in the last month, will likely be a lifelong treatment requirement for me. I just started dialysis a few weeks ago, and I'm going into a clinic every other day for 4 to 5 hours for dialysis, and my kidneys have basically gone to almost no production of capability. So
yeah. I was just going to say, I will tell you from firsthand experience, my daughter for half her life, she was 13, she was born with a kidney disease and it didn't rectify itself, and then they removed her right kidney when she was 5, and then this whole other journey that she's been on and we've been on. And I will tell you that all these years in the media that I've been in and the things that I've done, and it's like a lot of problems in the world, and it's not our problem, it becomes our problem. So unless you're a 15-year-old boy named Austin who had enough foresight to sign his donor card, most people don't consider this stuff until it takes up residence in their back pocket. Then they wonder why somebody hasn't done something sooner. And so, again, with all the medical maladies you've already endured, heart transplant and, you're having to have prosthesis on both your legs and on both your arms, and the splenectomy and this disease and all the rest, I don't know what your purpose is on the planet here, Paul, but I mean, I'm sitting here shaking my head. A couple of things are happening on my end. You know, I've had my own, I got electrocuted when I was 19. I was in a severe car accident, was 27. You give up a body part to your kid. I mean, there's been a lot of things in my life, but I'm listening to you going, what makes this guy tick? So while we have a few more minutes together, I got to ask you a couple questions that aren't really medical, but they're more, I guess, in the spiritual realm. And I got to tell you, some of the guys back in the day, that we didn't have these kind of conversations, they didn't have those problems either. But do you ever think, I mean, you must at some point have the thoughts like, you know, A, what is this all about? And B, what do I do with it? And C, why am I still here? I mean, do you have answers for any of that?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that. Yes, I guess the answer is yes. I have had thoughts through my life a number of times and events. Things have happened to me. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm still alive. Actually, some of my doctors have said the same thing to me, because they don't think I should have survived some of the difficult treatments I've been through.
Difficult.
Yeah. I mean, you know, being unconscious and nearly dying several times.
I get it. I wouldn't use the word difficult, but go ahead. A little stronger than that, but go ahead.
Yeah. You know, but it goes back earlier than that. You know, you mentioned aviation. In aviation, those of us who have flown difficult rescues, and I've had quite a few of mine, several noteworthy ones, that have been documented, they almost seem like they were impossible, but we saved lives doing it, and we attempted to save a life doing it, for lives in very dark night, bad storms, cliffs, you know, just really close to risking the crew to the point where, you know, you shouldn't do the job, but we did the job, and we wanted to do the job, but we came back knowing that there may have been a little bit of help going on up above us. Mm-hmm. And that's the spiritual nature, that it's a little bit hard to talk about, but that's reality. There may have been a helping hand on some of these, and when we saved some of these lives out there. And I can tell you that many of my fallen aviator friends and associates that I have known over the years, and you have known over the years, anyone who's flown, especially Coast Guard helicopters,
that aren't supposed to fly anyway, but go ahead.
Yeah, they you know, a lot of them were able to accomplish the mission, but quite a few of them were not, and right. They were doing their best to make it happen, and we think of them in our careers and our livelihood, and that, you know, it could have been us that day, but for whatever reason it wasn't, and we came back, and we're thankful for that, and those that are still living are thankful, those that are rescued are thankful. But it's a tight bond we have with our fellow aviators. I think of that quite a bit, you know. It's a unique part of the service that others are not part of, but we are, and we're thankful for that bond, and we stick together because of it.
It's amazing to me how many, you know, guys and women that I served with, and, you know, Facebook, for all it's basically an internet landfill for me, but it's a great way to stay in touch with people. And, you know, all it takes is a word here or there or a name, and everybody kind of convenes. There's a Coast Guard Airedales Treehouse page, they call it, on Facebook for all of us. And on the 14th of August, I just put a post up that at some point this conversation was going to take place. And I'm going to post the link on that Airedales page so anyone who's been in aviation could listen to the conversation, even though there's more to it than that. I just wanted to let you know how many people have already checked in on you, Paul, wishing you the best. I'm going to throw some names at you. I probably won't use these. I might later, but just so you know ahead of time, Roger Barnett checked in. A fellow named Jack Patton. I had the pleasure of meeting and traveling with Paul many years ago in France.
Paul has been one of the nicest people I've ever known. My prayers are with him. Andy Hayes, who is the group administrator, said, you know, please put it up when it's ready. Marcelino Zabal, I serve with Captain Langlois at ATC Mobile.
All kinds of nice people out there.
Mark L. Schaefer, I flew on many test flights in Mobile when he was lieutenant, one of the nicest people I've ever met. Hank Schaefer, our best wishes to Paul and his family. Paul and Linda Spittler, rode with him at the Coast Guard Academy.
Yep. All good people.
Yeah, well,
I know all those people, and you're ringing bells from the past.
And Guy Cashman just checked in a few days ago. Captain Paul Langlois is a distinguished officer, remarkable gentleman, flown many flights with him through portions of his career. My heartfelt thoughts are with him and his family. Thanks for letting us know. What about you? I mean, if you can apply that philosophy and theory of a little bit of help from above to some of the SAR, you know, calls you went out on, what about you personally? Again, I don't know anybody. I know a lot of people. I don't know anybody that comes close to going through the things that you've gone through. And as Cliff so accurately pointed out, well, he's a Navy guy. He's supposed to point that stuff out. Did you get that, Cliff?
Former Navy.
Yeah, okay. But listen, you
and were... They said I wasn't tall enough to get in the Coast Guard that I got in, so... They had to wade ashore or something like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, but you... Talking to you, if somebody was talking to you on the phone, just they would never know what you've been up against, what you're going through right now. How do you, I mean, that can't just be academy training. That's there's something deeper than there, don't you think?
Yeah, there must be. I just have this, I don't know, innate desire to stay alive and help people. And, and you know, maybe my disease has given me, without me knowing it, you know, when it happened, the latter part of my life after the Coast Guard active duty time, it's sort of like another chapter, perhaps. I'm talking about this disease, and I just want to give people awareness of the disease, but awareness of their themselves, really, if they are struggling with any type of ailment, and the ability to persevere and continue to live and thrive in their life despite disease and not to be depressed and realize they still have something to offer those around them and give them confidence to try to stay alive and continue to live. I mean, it's a great life. We have an opportunity to do things, and I also want to stay alive to be with my wife and my family longer and help them and just be with them and not be a burden on them so much as a better part of their life. And, you know, I don't want to quit. I always say in my emails I send to people, I give little updates every year or so on how I'm feeling. And I always say, never quit. And don't give up and keep on trying, because, you know, there's if I can help one person get out of their funk or whatever their problem is or their state of mind or just a little bit of encouragement, to me, that's a big deal. If I can help 10 people, that's a wonderful deal. Now that I'm talking to you, and who knows who may be listening out there, you know, maybe we'll help some more people. Just realize they can keep on going, keep on trucking, and be positive in your life, and don't be negative. Be smile, and every day is another day, and you can accomplish something new. So, I know that's sort of what I'm taking away from this new adventure I'm on, and I hope to be able to continue that way despite what all these health obstacles keep coming at me. It seems like every time I get another one, something else happens. And then I put on my, I'm a brave man, and I'm going to take on this next challenge, and I'm going to defeat it. And that's just how I'm living now. And I don't know where it comes from. I don't know. I can't put my finger on why I am that way. But for whatever reason, I don't want to give up the fight. I want to maybe end that this discussion with something that I told you both briefly, but it's spiritual in nature, and I generally don't talk about these things to people because it's very private. But about a few minutes before my heart transplant back 9 years ago on Easter Sunday, while I was just before I was rolled into the operating room, I had one of those spiritual revelations, if you will. It was quite amazing to me. While I lay there in the bed waiting to go into the OR for my heart transplant, this incredible white light surrounded me in my room. It blinded out everything in the room. My eyes were wide open, and it was like an opening into heaven. And I felt like I was being transformed through a tunnel and through carried up into heaven. And and voices literally were talking to me. And what I remember it was like a voice that said, and it used my name even, and it said, "Paul, everything will be all right. Do not worry." And it was just incredible that. And it lasted about a minute, I think. I mean, I was overwhelmed with joy and the presence of spirit. It just took me into another place that I can't even describe in words how wonderful it was. And then it slowly dissipated, and I was back in my room. I just went, "Oh my God," to Linda, who was right next to me. "What happened?" And I told her that I just had this miraculous presence. And I tell you that now because it actually changed how I view life after that. Quickly after that, I went into the operating room, and, you know, then I went through all the recovery, and it kind of fell away from my mind for a while. But then as I was in the recovery rooms a few days later, it came back to me that, wow, what did I just go through? And so I know other people have had these experiences because I've read about them. I guess I want to tell your audience and everybody who might hear this that heaven is real and it's a wonderful place. And when it's time for us to depart our place on earth, I hope we can all go there. And I'm not afraid anymore of leaving this world. Although I want to stay here as long as I can, I look forward to the next place that our soul will go to, because it's a wonderful place and we should not be afraid. And so I never really told people that story as I have right now, but that's what I want to leave you with, John.
Okay, Paul. And Cliff, I'm going to give you the last little bit of this. I don't know how you top any of that, so good luck.
Well,
let me ask you the question that I would have asked him that he answered without me even asking him. You two have this incredible connection, communication. There's some sort of almost unseen bond between you two that started many, many years ago, continues to this day. The fact that that email took place and we're having this conversation and people all over the world are going to hear these words and everything that's gone on here, not just the Coasties, but everybody. What's the big aha for you, Cliff? What is the, you're listening to what your friend's talking about. You know how this all took place. You know how long ago his journey started. And as you sat and listened to this again, what's the big aha for you in all that?
That's a great question. I think it comes down to what Captain Langlois just finished with. And that is, it reaffirms my solid belief that I am a spirit here in human form. And we are all connected. We are all connected through this source of love. And to understand that, to know that, takes away the fear of death. And it doesn't mean that, you know, death is going to be, it may be unpleasant, whatever it is, but it's part of who I am here. And that's what came up for me.
Hmm.
And I do want to, if I could, I can't top what he just said, but I want to, Paul, you wrote something to everybody. And when I say everybody, Paul sends out these emails to mm-hmm. hundreds of people. In December of 2012, and this is the last paragraph, I'd like to read it, if I could.
Sure.
"I find it difficult to publicly discuss my health situation, but my purpose is not to put myself in the spotlight or seek any form of sympathy. So many people are sick with various diseases, and many family members and friends unselfishly give up their precious time through the daily chore of caring for the sick. It's part of life. My purpose is to share information with amyloidosis patients, caregivers, and anyone wanting to learn more about this dreadful disease. Fortunately, amyloidosis appears to be getting more attention and awareness among the local primary care physicians, along with some potentially exciting new clinical trials among the global medical and pharmaceutical research community. There certainly is hope for the future. By leaving my contact email in my first testimonial, I estimate that I've made direct contact with over 50 people from around the world through email dialogue and follow-on phone calls. Sharing accurate info among our small community with amyloidosis is the key. If I can help even one more person, this testimony will be so worthwhile. I plan to report back after my third year of surviving amyloidosis at this time next year. Cherish every day. Always stay positive. Never give up. And I want to just add Dan Millman here, because Dan Millman wrote the book, The Life You Were Born to Live, A Guide to Finding Your Life Purpose. And in that book, he talks about it's not what we do in life, it's how we do it. And Paul, I would say to you, your purpose is showing us how to live a life that's wholehearted. And you're showing how to reach out to people and how to help people. And that's how I get it.
Yeah, I appreciate your reading that piece, Cliff. I truly meant every word when I wrote that back about 5 years ago. It still applies today. And I emphasize the first word. I am not here to gain sympathy in any way, shape, or form from anyone. I only want to try to spread the word and encourage people and educate people and give hope to people through whatever disease they may have. In my case, I have amyloidosis, which is a rare disease.
Paul, I'd like to acknowledge something publicly right now, that it takes so much courage for you to be doing what you're doing right now. It's the same courage that you have when you went on those missions in the 65. It's the same courage.
Yeah, I've learned that many, many people who have any type of health problem are afraid to talk about it. They don't want to admit it. They don't want to share it. They don't want anyone to know that they may be suffering or have a problem. I decided that I needed to tell people about my problem so that I could help others. Maybe get through it and learn that they could get through it, or maybe identify a diagnosis early. That may have what saved my life. I was diagnosed early enough, whereas others with this disease typically are not, and they die of organ failure before they're diagnosed and can be treated. You know, I've been a fighter my whole life. I've been a competitor. I don't like to quit. And that may be part of the reason I keep doing this. I refuse to give up. It may go back to my rowing days at the Coast Guard Academy. It may go back to my cycling. It's just something I have innate in my system. I refuse to quit. I'm not going to die. And I'm going to get to the top of the hill one way or the other. I have that gift, and I don't know why I have it, but I have it. And so I'm going to keep on fighting. I was given a gift of a new heart, a 15-year-old heart. So now I've got a 24-year-old heart in me, and I'm going to keep on going as long as I can. And for disabled veterans, forever, anybody out there that is struggling, you know, if I can help them, through the messages and through John's assistant with this podcast and through emails I send, I'm not a smart media guy, and I don't have the skills to send out all this information in a polished website, but if there's mechanisms to transfer the message in a way that is not a, you know, bravado or whatever, you know, talking about yourself, narcissistic, things like that. I don't want it to appear that way in the messages that we may send out. I don't want it to be all about me, in other words. I just want it to be me being a medium for transferring a message of hope and optimism.
And on that note, and I know, because I've been doing this for so long, that the people will hear exactly what they need to hear in just the way they need to hear it at just the time they needed it, because we had this conversation today. In the spirit of how this all started and to connect the dots that is beyond description, I am absolutely convinced that when people turn on their computers or listening on their iPhones or their laptops or whatever they're listening, whatever their electronic listening device is these days, somebody out there needed exactly to hear this, and they will. And then you'll know, whether you hear from them or not, you may just even get that nudge inside that this was worth the time doing it. Everything was in perfect order as it needed to be. And I got to tell you, I am very aware of those connected dots. And as I said, when that first email came and then the second one came, we went back and forth and then it rolled into the next thing. Would you be willing to do this? Yeah, I could do this. Without, you know, sometimes you have to just totally trust the process without knowing the next step, which is against the rules in the Coast Guard, by the way. We don't go out, you know, when you're going out on a search and rescue, you start at one spot, you make big circles, little circles turn into big circles, right, Cap? Until you cover a certain area. That's a defined search pattern. Life's not like that. But some of the things that, you know, you would have learned in academy or when you're in a helicopter, whatever it may be, some of that stuff comes into play. But I was just winging it here. And I've been sitting here basically listening, just shaking my head, unbelievable. The conversation and what took place here today. So I thank you both for making the time and taking the time. And Cliff Bayuk, I know that you're doing some coaching and things like that. If people want to find you or get involved in it, how do they do it?
Thank you for that plug. They can just go to my website, cliff@444coachinggroup.com.
You know, we're planting seeds here today, fellas. We'll just have to see what grows out of it, okay? I really appreciate the time. And I'm honored, Captain Langley. I'm just honored to hear your story.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to be part of your podcast.
Until next time, safe travels, semper paratus.